Love each other or perish, I wrote it down. Alden said that, I said.
Love each other or perish, Maury said again. It's good, no? And so true. Without love, we are birds with broken wings. Say I was divorced or living alone or had no children. This disease, what I'm going through, would be so much harder. I'm not sure I could do it. Sure, people come visit, friends, associates, but it's not the same as having someone who will not leave. It's not the same as having someone whom you know has an eye on you, is watching you the whole time. This is part of what a family is about. Not just love, but letting others know there's someone who is watching out for them. It's what I miss so much when my mother died, what I call your spiritual security, knowing that your family will be there watching out for you. Nothing else will give you that. Not money, not fame. Maury shot me a look. Not work, he added. Raising a family was one of those issues on my little list, things you want to get right before it's too late. I told Maury about my generation's dilemma with having children, how we often saw them as tying us down, making us into those parent things that we did not want to be. I admitted to some of these emotions myself. Yet when I looked at Maury, I wondered if I were in his shoes, about to die, and I had no family, no children. Would the emptiness be unbearable? He had raised two sons to be loving and caring, and like Maury, they were not shy with their affection. Had he so desired, they would have dropped everything they were doing to be with their father every minute of his final months. But that was not what he wanted. Do not stop your lives, he told them. Otherwise, this disease will have ruined three of us instead of one. In this way, even as he was dying, Maury showed respect for his children's worlds. Little wonder that when they sat with him, there was a waterfall of affection, lots of kisses and jokes, and crouching by the side of the bed holding hands. Whenever people ask me about having children or not having children, Maury said, I never tell them what to do. He looked at a photo of his oldest son. I simply say, there's no experience like having children. That's all. There is no substitute for it. You cannot do it with a friend. You cannot do it with a lover. If you want the experience of having complete responsibility for another human being and to learn how to love and bond in the deepest way, then you should have children. So would you do it again, I asked Maury. I glanced at the photo. Rob was kissing Maury on the forehead, and Maury was laughing with his eyes closed. Would I do it again? He said to me, looking surprised. Mitch, I would not have missed that experience for anything. Even though... He swallowed now and put the picture in his lap. Even though there was a painful price to pay. Because you'll be leaving them, I said. Because I'll be leaving them soon. He pulled his lips together, closed his eyes, and I watched the first teardrop fall down the side of his cheek. And now, he whispered, you talk. Me? Your family. I know about your parents. I met them years ago at graduation. You have a sister, too, right? Yes, I said. Older, yes? Older, I said. And one brother, right? I nodded. Younger? Younger, I said. Like me, Maury said. I have a younger brother. Like you, I said. He also came to your graduation, your brother, didn't he? Maury said. I blinked, and in my mind I saw us all there, 16 years earlier, the hot sun, the blue robes, squinting as we put our arms around each other and posed for Instamatic photos, someone saying, 1, 2, 3, smile! What is it? Maury said, noticing my sudden quiet. What's on your mind? Nothing, I said, changing the subject. Now, the truth is, I do indeed have a brother, a blonde-haired, hazel-eyed, 2 years younger brother, who looks so unlike me, or my dark-haired sister, that we used to tease him by claiming strangers had left him as a baby on our doorstep. And one day we'd say, they're coming back to get you. He cried when we said this, but we said it just the same. He grew up the way many youngest children grow up, pampered, adored, and inwardly tortured. He dreamed of being an actor or a singer. He reenacted TV shows at the dinner table, playing every part, his bright smile practically jumping through his lips. I was the good student, he was the bad. I was obedient, he broke the rules. I stayed away from drugs and alcohol, he tried everything you could ingest. He moved to Europe not long after high school, preferring the more casual lifestyle he found there. Yet he remained the family favorite. When he visited home in his wild and funny presence, I often felt stiff and conservative. As different as we were, I reasoned that our fates would shoot in opposite directions once we hit adulthood.
I was right in all ways but one. From the day my uncle died, I believed that I would suffer a similar death, an untimely disease that would take me out. So I worked at a feverish pace, and I braced myself for cancer. I could feel its breath. I knew it was coming. I waited for it the way a condemned man waits for the executioner. And I was right. It came. But it missed me. It struck my brother. The same type of cancer as my uncle had had, the pancreas, a rare form. And so the youngest of our family, with the blonde hair and the hazel eyes, had the chemotherapy and the radiation. His hair fell out, his face went gaunt as a skeleton. It's supposed to be me, I thought. But my brother was not me, and he was not my uncle. He was a fighter, and had been since his youngest days, when we wrestled in the basement and he actually bit through my shoe until I screamed in pain and let him go. And so he fought back. He battled the disease, in Spain, where he lived, with the aid of an experimental drug that was not and is still not available in the United States. He flew all over Europe for treatments. After 5 years of this, the drug appeared to chase the cancer into remission. That was the good news. The bad news was, my brother did not want me around. Not me, nor anyone in our family. Much as we tried to call and visit, he held us at bay, insisting this fight was something he needed to do by himself. Months would pass without a word from him. Messages on his answering machine would go without reply. I was ripped with guilt for what I felt I should be doing for him, and fueled with anger for his denying us the right to do it. So once again, I dove into work. I worked because I could control it. I worked because work was sensible and responsive. And each time I would call my brother's apartment in Spain and get that answering machine, him speaking in Spanish, another sign of how far apart we'd drifted, I would hang up and I would work some more. Perhaps this is one reason I was drawn to Maury. He let me be where my brother would not. Looking back, perhaps Maury knew this all along.